As we approach Mother's Day, a Mother's March and Rally for Justice in Baltimore. And we speak to the local organizer for Bring Back Our Girls. Next on the Ground. And welcome to this special edition of On the Ground, the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, where we cover social justice activism with a special emphasis on sustainable living, the environment, economics, labor, and of course, the left edge of culture and media. I'm Esther Avaram, your Thursday host, and I first want to thank Etan Thomas and Dave Zirin for their awesome new sports show, The Collision, and also thank all of our listeners who stepped up on that show to become members or to renew their membership with WPFW, your listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. Also want to thank you for staying with us and supporting our new show for this jam-packed hour. Our goal is $7.50 to raise during the next 60 minutes, and we know that is not much for a rare space where voices of activism and direct action can be heard. Today, voices of Johns Hopkins workers who will be marching this Saturday in Baltimore for a fair wage, and the organizers for the Bring Back Our Girls rally just at the Nigerian embassy. But first, the on-the-ground headlines. Activists gathered in front of the White House on Sunday to stage a reenactment of a wedding in Yemen attacked by U.S. drones. 12 civilians died when U.S. aircraft bombed their wedding procession in December. The killing sparked a ban on U.S. military drone strikes in Yemen, but they continue under the CIA. Former U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice canceled an appearance at Rutgers University following a wave of campus protests. Rice was to receive $35,000 to deliver the graduation commencement address later this month, but Rutgers students occupied a campus building and called for the invitation to be withdrawn over Rice's role in the Iraq War and the Bush administration's role in torture. In a statement, Rice said her appearance has become a distraction. Actions are planned from now until next Thursday outside the Federal Communications Commission, located at 445 12th Street in Southwest D.C. The Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, is on the verge of enforcing new rules that drastically change how the Internet works. At the behest of the world's largest telecom companies, the FCC may overturn net neutrality by creating a pay-to-play environment. Under the proposal, Internet service sites that can afford to pay large fees to Internet service providers will be easier to access. Sites that cannot afford to pay large fees will be slowed down, sectioned off, and pushed to the back. Net neutrality has been a pivotal rule in evening the playing field and creating fair competition and freedom of speech on the Internet. A coalition of organizations is mounting a full, multifaceted campaign, including a rally, letter writing, and for more information, go to freepress.net or popularresistance.org. And finally, there will be a pre-Mother's Day D.C. SodaStream boycott action this Saturday, May 10th at 2 p.m. at the Columbia Heights Mall. That's on 14th Street, just north of Columbia Heights Metro Station at the corner of 14th and Irving Street. The message of the organizers is this: don't let your friends and neighbors buy their mothers a SodaStream device for Mother's Day. SodaStream manufactures its beverage carbonating devices in an illegal Israeli settlement industrial park in the occupied West Bank. Help educate D.C. area shoppers about the injustice of the Israeli occupation. Ask them to refuse to buy SodaStream products and call on local store managers to tell their corporate headquarters to stop stocking SodaStream products. For more information, contact jvpdcmetro@gmail.com or call 301-580-9224. The event is also listed on Facebook under DC SodaStream Pre-Mother's Day Boycott Action. Well, those are the headlines. If you missed something, check us out at our new website, ontheground.org. When we come back in 30 seconds, this Saturday in Baltimore, thousands of healthcare workers will rally in support of fair wages at Johns Hopkins Hospital, touted as the number one hospital in America, but accused of paying poverty wages. And later, the organizer behind the D.C. rally to bring back our girls. Please stay tuned. everyone. Welcome back to On the Ground. I'm Esther Averam. Now, if we combine both the Johns Hopkins Hospital System and Johns Hopkins University, Hopkins is Maryland's largest employer. But workers at Hopkins Hospital say that it is precisely because of the size and low wages at Hopkins that the average wage is so low in Baltimore, and many full-time Hopkins workers still have to rely on public assistance. 2,000 service, maintenance, and technical workers at Hopkins have been in intense contract talks for more than 2 months to end poverty pay at this world-renowned hospital. Currently, many Hopkins workers rely on Medicaid or food stamps to supplement their low pay. The Hopkins caregivers, members of 1199 SEIU United Healthcare Workers East, seek to establish a $15 minimum wage for workers with at least 15 years experience in the first year of their proposed four-year contract. Their proposal would also lift every Hopkins worker to at least $14 an hour by the end of the four-year contract. The hospital has called the union's fair wage proposal unaffordable, but the union points out that Hopkins made $145 million in profit on an operating revenue of $1.9 billion in fiscal year 2013. On Saturday from May 10th, from noon to 3 p.m., Hopkins caregivers will join with thousands of supporters at McKeldin Square in downtown Baltimore in a major rally and march to end poverty pay at Hopkins. Special guests will include Danny Glover and The Wire's Wendell Pierce. Hopkins caregivers will also be joined by thousands of other 1199 SEIU members from New York, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. The event will also commemorate the 45th anniversary of Coretta Scott King's work in Baltimore that helped found the union at Hopkins. In 1969, just a year after the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was slain, Mrs. King came to Hopkins and stood with Hopkins workers. Well, when these 2,000 Hopkins workers went on a three-day strike last month and had an opportunity as a communicator for 1199 to speak with many of them, here is the Reverend Daniel Washington, a surgical technician at Hopkins for 12 years, and Michelle Duggar Elsley, a clinical customer service representative there for more than 20 years.
Well, I'm out here today marching because of the unfair wages that Hopkins are trying to offer the employees who dedicated themselves to this institution for more. Some employees been here for 2 years, and we got some employees been here for over 25 years. And the amount of money that they're making is not worth the labor and time that we're pouring into this institution. Hopkins is a number one hospital because of our sweat and our labor, not because of anything the administration is doing. Okay, even when they need ideas to run this institution better, they come down to our level, ask us questions, we give them ideas, and they go back and implement them. So they're getting paid top dollars for the ideas that we give them and for all the sweat and labor that we pour into this place. We built this building. Hopkins ain't built this building. The employees who come in as they quote-unquote say entry-level jobs are the one that built this place and help keeps it running. And they don't want to give us money to keep our lights on, to feed our children, to buy a decent house or car, to get to work to do what we love to do. It's not fair.
Now, you have a perspective also as a minister in the community. I mean, what is it like to see people who work 40 hours a week, right? And they still, some people have to, they're working at Hopkins, but they're also receiving food stamps or Medicaid because of the low pay.
Employees in that situation, well, I can tell you that from my perspective, because when I first started working here, the income that I was making then, I could not afford to pay my taxes for 7 years in order to keep a roof over my head. If I would have paid the proper taxes for a single man, I would have been bringing home something like $365 every 2 weeks. And I would have been homeless. Well, I was homeless once, but when I came here and got a job, I believed by faith that I would not be homeless again. So I had to make a conscious decision to not pay the government their taxes in order to keep a roof over my head or to go back into the streets. Well, now I'm paying all that back taxes back because I made a decision not to be homeless. Amen. And because of God, he's kept me. And he's making a way for me to pay off these back taxes. And so we got individuals here who are living out of their cars with children. We got individuals who have a roof over their head, but barely can pay their gas and electric and keep their kids in the house that they got because of the wages.
You know, what does it mean in terms of our society when we have a place that's called the number one hospital? You have corporations like Walmart that are also paying poverty wages, and they're getting either subsidies from the government. What do you see needs to be done? I mean, how do we see a way out of this?
Well, in order for that wall to be broken, the individuals who run these institutions and establishments first have to have a heart. They have to stop thinking about themselves and their families and think about the people who help them keep their corporations running. We are a part of the family because we work together and labor together. So they continue to monopolize the finances to keep it amongst themselves instead of sharing the wealth with everyone else. Until they make a moral decision that we have to do right by the people that help us to keep this place running, it's not going to be a change. And the only way that's going to happen is through prayer and supplication. Amen. I believe in the power of prayer, and I believe God will break down these walls.
But I'm sure you also believe that by coming out here today, that you all can make a difference too.
Oh, most definitely, because of what we're doing today, it's going to affect the institution and the whole. It's going to affect their business. Our intent is not to hurt the patient and the patient care, but we have to reach these individuals to let them know you can't keep requiring of us to give and you don't give back.
What it seems to me that a lot of businesses are built on the foundation of poverty wages.
Correct. In order to keep their profit margin high, they have to keep the wages like it is. But individuals who start making a stand can start changing that. That's one of the problems, is that people have to get courageous and they have to walk by faith as a unit in order to start breaking down these walls and changing the industry as a whole. Until they start standing up for what they want, they'll never have. And that's why we out here today. In order for us to have, we got to come out here and make a stand. We got to let the world as a whole know what these industries are doing to the people that work for them. So.
Well, I am a team player, and it's to fight for our rights to increase wages, because we are having a lot of issues with making ends meet. Behind the fact that the cost of living goes up and the little increase that we may get through the hospital, it makes it difficult for a lot of us to meet our bills and all. Because once you give us a little increase, then the insurance increases and other things increase, and it's not like you're really experiencing, you know, a break in your wages behind the fact that everything else is costing more. So you're still right back where you started from. You're struggling. A lot of people can't, you know, you can't apply for public assistance because you don't qualify. With me, I'm unable to qualify. My scale is above that, but I have two children in college. I have my granddaughter that I'm raising because my daughter's overseas. So it's kind of difficult, you know, to try to flex, trying to work. Can't work an extra job because we have minor children. You know, so it's a struggle.
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people who said that they pretty much have to either work two jobs or, you know, hope they can rely on someone else.
And it's a struggle, but relying on somebody else is also, you know, is disappointing, because you shouldn't have to rely on somebody else,
right?
Especially when you're out here working every day and you're really trying to make, you know, things work for you. You know, and some people can't go to school. Unfortunately, I was able to be able to do that because at the time my children was a little older, and, you know, I was able to be out of the house and flex back and forth, but it's still a struggle.
Right. What do you do at the hospital?
I'm a clinical customer service representative.
Okay, and how long
it's a struggle.
You worked at Hopkins?
I've been at the hospital for 28 years. I had two breaks in between children, but now I'm back up at 20. And it is a struggle. It is a struggle. So, but you just got to do what you got to do, and you have to be out here trying to fight for them to really understand that we really need, we make the hospital run.
Right.
You know, so it's,
When you say 20, what did you mean? You've been here 20 years? Or?
Well, what happened was because I had two high-risk pregnancies, I had a break in between 13 months, and they start you back over at 12 months. So, unfortunately, my high-risk pregnancies took me out of one at 13 months and the other for 14 months. So, I had to start all over again. So, now I'm back at 20 years.
Oh, okay.
I'm back at 20 years. So, I'm not going to benefit from my 8 years that I did prior to.
Wow.
You know. So, they took that away from me. But it's okay. It's okay. Because my faith is strong and I know this thing is going to work here.
Well, those are the voices of Johns Hopkins workers on the ground last month in the 3-day strike as what is touted as the nation's number one hospital. And, you know, I want to take this opportunity. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Community Comment and Watch, what we call On the Ground. I'm your host, Esther Avarum. And we're going to take this time out to for our spring fundraiser. Please go to your phones, 202-588-9739, and to support our show today. You know, we are in a battle for our lives. You know, we're in a war against increasing corporate power and decreasing power of the 99%. And one of the ways that that war is waged is with information. You know, I'm sure that you listening at home or at your office or in your car right now realize how rare it is to hear the voices of your neighbors, friends, family, people, you know, speaking from the perspective of what it's just like to deal with everyday life, you know, like you just heard from the Reverend Daniel Washington and Michelle Duggar Elsley, two Hopkins workers. But that is what we're going to bring you every week here on the ground, the new Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. So if you value that, because I know you value that, I want you to go to the phones at 202-588-9739. I got a correction during our broadcast of those voices that our goal is 500 for the hour. So I have about 45 minutes to raise $500. So, 202-588-9739 is the number to call. And, you know, all of us are volunteers here, and you know I'm not paid. Even though I've worked all my life as a journalist, I come in. I volunteer my time because I understand the value of independent media. You know, I know that big media, corporate media, is just that. It's sponsored by corporations. But here at WPFW, you are our sponsors. You know, you are what drives the engine of the station. And so we have these fundraisers a few times a year to reach out to you to get give you an opportunity to renew your membership or to join the WPFW family. 202-588-9739 is the number to call. And what we're going to do right now is go to a brief break, and then when we come back, we're going to hear from the organizer behind the DC rally to bring back our girls. And welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm your host, Esther Avarum. Happy to be back with the WPFW family on Thursdays. Well, In the DMV, there are two cases of missing girls that have been in the news. Here in D.C., 8-year-old Relisha Rudd disappeared from a city-run homeless shelter in March. And in Nelson County, Virginia, about 100 miles west of Richmond, 48-year-old handyman Randy Taylor is on trial for the murder of 17-year-old Alexis Murphy, who has been missing since last August. In the second day of testimony last week, prosecutors presented evidence of a shirt stained with the teenager's blood, as well as her earring and a fingernail found in Taylor's trailer. The trial is scheduled for at least another week. It is with this troubled backdrop that the DMV learned, along with the rest of the world, that more than 270 teenage girls were abducted from a rural school in Nigeria by the terrorist organization Boko Haram. On Tuesday in D.C., a diverse crowd of 300 people rallied outside the Nigerian embassy in Northwest D.C., organizing under the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls. The rally coincided with dozens of other gatherings around the country and world. Today, I'm pleased to have in the studio with me, I'm sorry for the noise, Lola Adeleoso, organizer of the rally. And, you know, I understand that there were like, you know, 300 or more people out there. Yes. A lot of people came over on their lunch break, right? So what compelled you to organize Tuesday's rally, and how did you connect with this Bring Back Our Girls campaign?
Well, first of all, I'm a Nigerian citizen, and I was born and raised in Lagos, Nigeria. And so then I came to the United States for my undergraduate education at Howard University. I'm still connected. I have family in Nigeria. And so I was tired of, first of all, the lack of attention is the fact that over 200 girls disappeared in the middle of the night, and the world does not know about this. I heard about the incident the day after it happened, and I was on vacation in Thailand with my mother, and we heard it there. And then we came back, and we were like, wait a minute. It's nowhere to be found on the United States television, on the radio, nothing. And so I just got tired of being angry and feeling helpless and decided, you know what, if no one's going to step up, somebody needs to. And that's what spurred it last week, Thursday. I pretty much just got on Facebook. We know the power of social media. And I said, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people, but even if it's just five of us standing outside the Nigerian embassy, we will be the loudest five people they've ever heard. Right. And lo and behold, by the end of that day, 100 people had signed up. By the next day, over 200. And, you know, it was just amazing as to how many people were sharing this in all different places with their networks. And on Tuesday, almost 300 people showed up. So we printed like t-shirts, 200 t-shirts, and we were done in like the first 30 minutes. And people were like, can we buy t-shirts? And so we knew that people care, because mm-hmm. it's not a Nigerian issue. It's about women, girls, but it's ultimately about a human rights issue. Mm-hmm. These girls deserve to have an education. And if you know a lot about the northern eastern region of Nigeria, you know, that's a privilege. You know, not a lot of people allow their girls to be educated. So the parents of these girls wanted them to have an education. Right. And no one should snatch that away from them. No one should steal the dreams of a future, because we all know that women are the backbone of any society. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're looking at future leaders, potential future leaders, mothers, you know, wives, whatever they choose to make of their lives. They were on the precipice of having been to really see their future happen.
Right.
And now that could possibly be taken away from them. That's not right. And that's not acceptable.
Right. You know, so there's no personal connection, you know, it's more so being, you know, a black woman on the planet and seeing these young women and girls taken away.
Sure, I think it is personal, because one, I am a Nigerian, but two, they're my sisters. You know, I may not have met any of them directly, but I have an emotional response to the fact that the world is sitting back, well, the world was sitting back and letting a whole bunch of brown girls not be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And that goes on every single day, even beyond Nigeria. Like you said, Relisha Rudd's situation in America, in D.C., you know, the lack of immediate response until there was some kind of pressure, like, wait a minute, a girl can just, she should not just disappear.
Right.
And so that's what we were trying to say is, wait a minute, this is not, you can't just take our girls.
Right.
You can't take our daughters, you can't take our sisters, our cousins, and then think we're just going to sit back and let it happen.
Right.
It's not acceptable in Nigeria. It's not acceptable anywhere in the world.
Right. So what did you want the rally to accomplish, and what would you like to see happen next?
Sure. So we wanted answers from the Nigerian government. Prior to the rally, the government had pretty much been silent on the situation. It wasn't until Sunday that President Goodluck Jonathan made a statement saying, well, we formed a committee. Well, what's a committee supposed to do? You know, you need to go after these girls. A committee is not going to do much. And so we were looking for answers from our representatives here, and that's the embassy. And so we said we were not going to leave until they came out to talk to us. Well, they sent four representatives out to speak to us, and I had the honor of directly asking them, what were you doing to bring these girls back safely and secure? And they pretty much told me that there was a committee that had been set up, and so I had to interject and tell them that, well, I asked them if they were fathers, and they said yes. And I asked them, how many of you have daughters? And two of them said they had daughters. And I said, put yourselves in the shoes of these parents. If you were being told that a committee 3 weeks later was being set up by your own government that should protect its citizens to figure out what they're going to do before they actually act,
mm-hmm.
how would you respond as a parent?
Right.
And they had no response. So what I'm asking everyone to do is, one, we are asking people to keep talking about the safe and secure return of these girls. But furthermore, there has to be an after plan. What happens when they bring them back home? Because we know it is very still unstable in Borno State. As you know, you've heard reports about the murders of yesterday. And there's, right now, I'm getting information on my alert that there's this video possibly circulating that has not been validated yet, but it shows possibly Boko Haram stoning to death one of the girls. And if that's accurate, then this is really showing everyone that this is a huge human rights situation. Furthermore, I also want people to really start, we are interested in really starting to hold the Nigerian government accountable for protecting its citizens. Every government is responsible for protecting its citizens. Every government is responsible to ensure that everyone can get a safe education. But also we want to make sure that there are support services to help these girls when they come back home to be able to deal with the trauma that they've experienced. And furthermore, we also want the multinational corporations that are working in Nigeria to know that they're operating in a system that is politically corrupt, and that, you know what, maybe they can also help in putting where you're working, because if you're working in the northeastern region, your employees are in danger as well. And I'm not saying pulling out of Nigeria not to destabilize the economy of Nigeria, because it seems like based on the GDP we might be getting somewhere, or we're on the tipping point of getting somewhere. But be aware that you are operating in a corrupt political system that seems not very invested in its citizens. And finally, we also want our supporting neighbors in Cameroon, in Niger, and in Chad to work with the Nigerian government in helping us control the borders. The region where these Boko Haram men are is really, first of all, it's very vast. It's a huge area. So it's not a small area. So that's why it's hard for them to figure out where in the middle of this jungle they're located.
I actually heard one person say it's like they have their own country.
Yes, it's like pretty much almost their own country. It's a huge area. It's like almost, you know, think about the whole northeast region of America. It's really big and very vast and very dense.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's the borders are very fluid. You know, one minute you're in Nigeria, next minute you're in Cameroon. And that's how they've been able to get through and to hide. And so we're asking the countries of Niger, Chad, and Cameroon to help us, one, control the borders, but two, if they have any information, if these girls have already been trafficked across the borders of Nigeria, to help us identify where they possibly could be.
Okay. Now, believe it or not, you know, some people actually aren't on Facebook. And if someone would like to connect with the Next Action mm-hmm. or connect with your organization, can they do that outside of Facebook?
Yes. So, you know, like I said, Holta started on Thursday, but through the great volunteers and people who are willing to support us and lend their talents, we created a website. We're calling it actforaccountability.com. So that's act4accountability.com. And people, there's a contact us form, and we're asking people to sign up so that we can build a database of supporters and people that we can help hopefully activate to rally around the world. But furthermore, we've developed a toolkit on there of images that you can use to make your own signs, a banner, or any social media area where you're with. It's Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, that you can change your profile picture that says, you know, we support Chibok, 276 Girls Bring Our Girls Back. You know, the more visible people are about this issue, you know, use these toolkits. If you're organizing rallies at any Nigerian embassies around the world, so that they don't forget it, because President Goodluck Jonathan this morning said that this is the beginning of the end of terrorism in Nigeria.
Yes. So, you know, it's very disturbing. I'm still thinking about what you said about this unsubstantiated video of the girl being stoned to death. This is really troubling, and I'm sure you'll be following up on that. I've been speaking with Lola Adeleoso, organizer of Tuesday's Bring Back Our Girls rally outside the Nigerian embassy. We had some sound from him, but we were kind of running short of time, but it was awesome. People were off the chain.
People were hyped. You know, people were angry. People yeah. were passionate. It was a peaceful rally and protest, and I want us to keep the fire burning. Yeah. I know that there are different events being planned around the D.C. area in the next few days. We're considering something on Mother's Day because there's a whole bunch of mothers who won't be able to enjoy Mother's Day.
Right.
And so we will post information on actforaccountability.com, and we encourage everyone, all your listeners, to please continue to support us however they can, and also please continue to talk about this issue.
Yes. Okay. Again, I've been speaking with Lola Adeleoso, organizer of Tuesday's Bring Back Our Girls rally outside the Nigerian embassy. Thank you for joining us,
Thank
Lola.
You.
When we come back, we'll take your calls at 202-588-0893. But we are in the midst of our spring fund drive, so the number I really want you to remember is also 202-588-9739. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Krista Vieda, and this is your WPFW Social Justice Calendar for the Washington metro area. Thursday, May 8th is a welcome home celebration and fundraiser for former Panther and political prisoner Marshall Eddie Conway, marking the end of 44 years of his unjust imprisonment. 6 to 10 p.m. at the Sojourner Douglas College Auditorium, 200 North Central Avenue, Baltimore, Maryland. For more information, call 410-323-7200. Also, Thursday, May 8th, help grow Grassroots DC at this spring fundraiser. Come out to learn more about Grassroots DC and support this important political work over good food, drinks, good company, and inspiring stories from the amazing folks at Grassroots DC. There will also be a special performance by local artist B. Study, 7 to 9 p.m. at 1223 Decatur Street, Northwest DC. For more information, visit grassrootsdc.org. Monday, May 12th, a group of myalgic encephalomyelitis, or ME, patients will gather on the east side of the Capitol building off of 1st Street Northeast to protest Department of Health and Human Services' 30-year mismanagement of this disease. The demonstrators will unveil the Banner of Hope as a tribute to patients disabled by ME, 12 noon until 1:30 p.m. For more details, contact Mary DeMock by email to mecfsaction@yahoo.com. If you'd like your event included in the Social Justice Calendar, send a plain text email 2 weeks in advance to socialjusticewpfw@ips-dc.org with the event title and date in the subject line and no attachments. The Social Justice Calendar is a public service brought to you by the Institute for Policy Studies in partnership with WPFW, your station for jazz and justice.
And welcome back to the new Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition. I'm your host, Esther Rivera. Thursdays will be dedicated to social justice activism with a special emphasis on sustainable living, the environment, economics, labor, and, of course, the left edge of culture and media. Today is May 8th, 3 days before Mother's Day. For the past half hour, we've been covering the ongoing fight for a fair wage at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And that fight will feature this Saturday, a mother's march and rally for justice in Baltimore. And we've been speaking with Lola Adelioso, organizer of the Bring Back Our Girls rally at the Nigerian Embassy on Tuesday, part of a worldwide day of similar rallies. Now it's your turn. The number to call is 202-588-0893. But we are in the midst of our spring fun drive, so I also want you to call 202-588-9739. To support Community Comment and Watch on the ground this morning. Now, Lola is going to stick with us while we wait your calls and your donations, right, and your support. So, you know, I was really troubled in all of this this past week to hear that the First Lady had kind of come out saying that, you know, perhaps urging the arrest of some of the protesters in Nigeria and saying that it was all a hoax and you know, yeah. It wasn't real what these girls had experienced. So what was your reaction to that?
how can I say this nicely? As a Nigerian, I just like, wow. How can, first of all, you are the wife of the president of the country. It's like, imagine if Michelle Obama went on national television and said that. She asked for them to come to Abuja. She had some questions because there was all this, these statements being released from the government that, first of all, who's seen the girls being kidnapped? They're not even sure if this is true. Well, the parents of the children who were asking for you to help bring back their daughters are telling you our children kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And then for her to, under the guise of asking questions, have these women go to Abuja and then later on have them arrested, order the mm-hmm. arrest of them. First of all, she's not a government employee. Mm-hmm. So how do you have the power to order the arrest of citizens? You know, mm-hmm. so that furthermore shows us that there's just so much in the Nigerian government that we need to address, mm-hmm. whether it's the nepotism or her thinking it's okay for her to make statements like that are contradictory to what is being factually accounted for. It just boggles the mind. It just right. boggles the mind, and it boggles the mind to think that are these the people that we want to stay in power leading our country? I, as a Nigerian citizen, do not want them, Jonathan and his wife, as the leaders of, and the representatives of Nigeria.
Right. So 202-588-9739 is the number we want to remind people of this morning to support on the ground the Thursday edition of Community Comment and Watch. I'm your host, Community Watch and Comment. I'm your host, Esther Avaram, and joining me in the studio is the fabulous Katia Stitt.
Good morning.
With
Esther.
These fierce reading glasses on.
Guest. Yes.
Lilac.
Cheaters. Yep. I need them. And we need you. That is why I came down to sit with Esther for a minute. Your support is so very important. Again, you know, we get the soundbite, as we saw earlier with Dave and Etan. We get the soundbite of what's happening. We get the soundbite of what's happening in Nigeria all over the media, both I would say corporate media and nonprofit or right. public media, but we don't ever get that in-depth story, which is what we're getting right now, firsthand, you know, what is happening from a Nigerian woman. Mm-hmm. Very important. You know, often people talk about issues, not including the folks that have been affected. So we're so glad that you bring this kind of activism to the airways, Esther, as you've done. We do want to thank Lisa for renewing support in Southeast D.C. Thank you,
Lisa.
Much.
Thank you.
Let's see. Our new total is less than $500, we
okay.
know. But we still do want to make the goal in this hour. We have until noon to do it. And again,
I have 20 more minutes
yes.
for you to support direct action. Activism and activists highlighted every Thursday on the ground. I know last week we had so many calls for the farmer on the air talking about trying to stop fracking in her community, basically ruining, destroying the farmland in her town and keeping her from doing her organic farming, making residents sick, the children sick, the adults sick. And, you know, they had to come to D.C. because it was a federal case too. And, you know, we're here in D.C. and we need to take advantage of that. People have to come here often to fight for their causes. And so we had her last week talking about a lawsuit, you know, to basically keep this fracking company and to keep our government, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, from enforcing that construction of that that fracking.
And, you know, that's but one example of what you will never find anywhere else but at WPFW. Absolutely. Or Pacifica Radio, you know, throughout the country. It was a great experiment that Lou Hill started here, right, with Pacifica Radio, radio with integrity, radio with a beautiful aesthetic, radio powered by the people. And the people, as you said earlier, in your community, your neighbors, your friends, but doing fabulous things, trying to change the world, you know, and we are trying to change the world with one pledge at a time, really.
Right. And as a matter of fact, now that I think about it, when I do tune into, because I'm a news junkie, so I do watch a lot of cable news and stuff. So, you know, you see these ads, even on some national public radio for gas drilling, you know, and so all of these ads that we're inundated with about the wonders of natural gas, what they're really talking about is fracking.
Right.
And what they're really pumping up and trying to convince us of is that fracking is okay. But we know it's not okay. And just like last week, we had the other side. You never hear about a farmer. I never hear a farmer interviewed on TV,
well,
you know.
But, you know, the other thing is that they really can't, because we are free of that corporate influence.
Right.
They have to bring that side to the table, because the other side would make their corporate sponsors crazy, and we don't have that issue. We are only beholden to the listener, the member supporter, and we ask you to go to our phones
That's
now.
That's right, go to
202-588-9739
or 1-800-222-9739. And if you're listening online, you know, you're at work, you know, you have your headphones on in front of the computer, you know, they think that you're like, you know,
being
like
subversive,
doing some like work, right? But you're like checking out, you are working, but you're also checking out WPFW in the meantime.
And you're enriching your mind.
You can go to the website, WPFW, right there online where you're listening. You can click on the website and make your donation today to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment on the Ground edition. And so, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we'll get back to your interview, and I'll come back a little later.
Okay. And when you come back, you'll have some great news for me.
Absolutely.
Because all these
keep
people
the
will have
called
202-588-9739.
Or
1-800-222-9739. Or pledge on our website at WPFW.org.
That's right.
Right. Now, Lola, before when we were talking, you said that when you were out of the country in Thailand, you heard about this issue. But when you came back here, you didn't hear about it.
Nothing. Yeah. There was nothing on television. And, you know, I tuned into Al Jazeera, which was Al Jazeera America, was the only place that was even mentioning it. BBC maybe had a ticker running at the bottom of the screen, but nobody was actively asking these questions of, wait a minute, where are these girls and why? Why is the Nigerian government just silent on this situation? But then, of course, as the social media aspect of it got, you know, larger and louder, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, 200 and plus girls are missing,
right?
And there's nothing being done. And so I think that, you know, once again, shows you the power of social media, shows you the power of people caring, that it's not just a Nigerian issue, it's a human rights issue. It's bringing these girls back safely. It's about making sure that, you know, Nigerian citizens in the northeastern region, and in fact the entire country, are safe and can be protected by our government. But it's also that women have the right to an education. You know, they wanted to be educated. Their parents wanted them to be educated. And for a group of people, armed people who impersonated the Nigerian military, to go in the middle of the night, kidnap them. But also furthermore, why is it, you know, now people are now digging deeper into Boko Haram. Like, wait a minute, who's funding them? You know, right, where are exactly. they? Where are they getting all this ammunition from? You know, how is it that they're just able to swoop in and disappear? Right. And we're, you know, whenever they're combated, with, when they're confronted by the Nigerian military, the Nigerian military is always outgunned. So right. what's going on, and why has it that since 2002 they have consistently been growing larger, they seem to be getting bolder, and in conjunction with the World Economic Summit that is happening there, it seems like they're really just trying to show you how powerful they are currently in Nigeria. And unfortunately, the lack of response from the Nigerian government has shown that we are somewhere they're either overwhelmed, they have no capacity, and ultimately they still need some help. So we're asking, you know, the help that we've been asking for is not military action. We're not asking for the United States or any other international government to send in military, but we, you know, you have intelligence. You know, we have, you know, satellite images. If there's a way to figure out what happened on the back it up to April 14th, figure out what happened in that area, right. Try to figure out other intelligence. Maybe that's a way ultimately that we can start building a way of finding these girls.
Okay, you're listening to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. I'm Esther Averam, your host of what we call the On the Ground edition. I'm talking to Lola Adeleoso, organizer of the Take Back
Bring back
Our Girls demonstration on Tuesday at the Nigerian Embassy. And so I want you to let us know you're listening. Let us know that you're in the house today. If you're here in D.C., it could be in Brooklyn, Woodridge, Capitol Hill, Georgetown, Anacostia, Shepherd Park, Shaw, Adams Morgan, Columbia Heights, wherever you are, if you're downtown here where we're located right now, just give us a call. Let us know that you're in the house. Let us know that you're standing up for public media, standing up for the people's voice here at 89.3. If you're in Maryland, Silver Spring, Bethesda, Chevy Chase, Hyattsville, Bowie, College Park, Riverdale, Capitol Heights, any place in Maryland, in Annapolis, you know, there are places that we're reaching that we haven't reached for a long time, even well past Baltimore. You know, earlier in the show we had the voices of workers from Johns Hopkins Hospital, who will be marching this Saturday for a fair wage. And, you know, there are a lot of places that haven't heard us. This is our first drive since we have been restored to full power. And what that means is that there are communities throughout the DMV and also parts of Virginia, West Virginia, even Delaware. Someone told me, like, maybe a little tip of, you know, I know I make that drive up into Pennsylvania. So, like, you know, the southern edge of Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey that can hear us that didn't used to be able to hear us. So, any place you're hearing us, represent this morning, be in the house for a Community Watch and Comment on the ground. If you're in Virginia, Reston, Arlington Falls Church, Centerville, Alexandria, if you're listening online, this is your time to stand up for public media, media that you control, not the gas drillers, not the makers of, you know, some kind of male enhancement performance medicine or whatever they call it. And, you know, you're not, you know, having to hear all those kinds of commercials. You are the sponsor. You're the producer. You make it happen. So you make us happen. And, you know, I want to make a special appeal to people who have been longtime Community Comment listeners and callers. You know, this is your time to show up and appreciate the space and time that you have to provide, you know, to make a statement and provide your voice. So 202-588-9739 is the number to call. And also, you know, in addition to talking about this horrific situation with the girls in Nigeria, we were talking about income inequality today. We were talking about, you know, what has happened at Hopkins, workers, you know, on strike last month for a fair wage and marching this Saturday. And, you know, these are also issues that are international. You know, and, you know, when you think about the fact that these families in Nigeria probably made a huge sacrifice to send their girls to school, and they were willing to make that sacrifice, even risking the danger that they were in. Can you give us a little more insight about the economic equations of just trying to get an education as a girl in Nigeria?
Sure, and it's even the situation in the north is worse than in the south. I was born and raised in Lagos, Nigeria, and so I come from a family of people who are highly educated. My grandfather was a civil engineer. My mother is a doctor. My father is a doctor. So our underlying philosophy as a family is education is paramount. Without an education, women don't have access to opportunities living in a male-dominated world. But furthermore, in the North, there's this tension between the cultural aspect of, you know, some people who don't believe in educating girls. But furthermore, the fact that these families risked putting their daughters in school and having them go to take an exam that is offered once a year. You are required to take this exam once a year in order to qualify or to matriculate into higher education. Mm-hmm. I went through the process. Everyone I know who's going to be lived in Nigeria has gone through the process. And so the fact that they risked having their daughters, and there were other girls from other schools in other towns that were part of the girls that was taken, which is why the numbers were fluctuating between 230 and 300, because the government didn't realize that other girls from other regions were there. So, yeah, the economic situation, unfortunately, is not one that is, majority of Nigeria is really like Chibok. I'm just going to say it. While we have the highest GDP now based on economic numbers, a lot of Nigerians are dealing with a high rate of unemployment. The wages are very, very low. And unfortunately, there does not seem to be that priority, or hadn't been. Maybe now that the summit has been in Nigeria, maybe something will change. But there hadn't been that priority on really trying to figure out how to create jobs, how to help people who are poor. We really don't have a middle class in Nigeria. You know, it's really very stark, those that are really wealthy and then majority of the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. There was a New York Times article talking about the 1% of Lagos, which is, a bulk of Nigeria. It's even lower than that. It's like 0.3% of the people that hold a huge chunk of the wealth of Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the country is really just trying to figure out how to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And so the North is even worse when it comes to that, because it's a huge agricultural area. So that they rely on producing crops. They rely on, cattle and other ways in which that they can raise funds to be able to sell their goods either in the North or come to the South and the East to be able to trade. And so having their livelihoods being destroyed by Boko Haram, as of yesterday, it was at a market that the attack was the attack occurred. Having their future mothers, wives, and educators and leaders being snatched and possibly tortured and killed, you're really destabilizing that whole area. You know, and it's not even just the girls. In February, 50 boys were killed in the middle of the night. They were locked in their dormitories while they were alive and burned alive. Those who tried to escape had their throats slashed. So that's what we're dealing with. We're not dealing with people who are reasonable. We're not dealing with people who really want to see something good happen. Right. And even if you go back to the origins of Boko Haram, I think that the whole concept of maybe that they are they hate Western education comes from the fact that these boys, when they were being recruited, probably were not allowed to go to school. So I think that there might be some underlined hatred towards what they were not offered by their parents. They were probably sent out of their homes, and so they had to go beg, and as a result, that was a recruitment strategy for those who were on the fractions of, whatever you want to think about. But it is ultimately about making sure that their jobs And also, once again, those corporations that are working in Nigeria, those multinational corporations that are benefiting from our GDP and our economy, you know, how can they help improve the situation economically by offering more jobs to citizens of Nigeria's of Nigeria when you come and work in our country? You know, that's one way of doing it. But ultimately, they also have a role to play. You know, it's if they speak up against what is going on in the country, maybe that's a way to help us have that conversation with the federal government. Right. By keeping quiet, everyone who's keeping quiet is just as accountable as Boko Haram for these girls.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. So much powerful information. You've been listening to Lola Adeleosa, organizer of the Bring Back Our Girls rally at the Nigerian Embassy on Tuesday, part of a worldwide day of similar rallies. And, you know, we're in the midst of our spring fundraiser. I have about, well, I have to get up out of my seat in about 2 minutes, but we have maybe about 7 minutes for you to call and support the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, On the Ground edition. And, you know, I just know that you value the type of information, the type of voice that we're able to give the community on this show. So I want you to call. You know, we're stressing the sustainer. And so what we're able to do is break down your donation into monthly payments. So for a pledge of $125, it's only $12.50 a month. You can give as little as $10 a month. And we know that you value WPFW and what you're able to get, you know, more than like $2.50 a week. And that's what it really boils down to. And, you know, again, we are in a fight for our lives out here. We are in a fight for our lives against corporate power, billionaires, who are increasingly able to not only control our economy, but in control information, control places like Fox News, you know, that are spewing disinformation 24/7. This is a space that you can control. So I have to make way for Chris the Property, and don't forget the Blues. But, you know, I want to make a final appeal for you to call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or go to right on the website WPFWFM.org. All right, and that will do it for me this morning. Special thanks to Mike Nicella on the board. And again, thanks to Lola Adeleosa from Bring Back Our Girls. And again, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at On The Ground Show. Our new website is onthegroundshow.org. Peace. Stay tuned for Krista Property on Don't Forget the Blues, followed by the D.C. Politics Hour with Eugene DeWitt Kinlow, and then the Empower Hour with Deshuna Prince. Peace. I'm